Since the 1800s, Hickok & Boardman Insurance Group has been providing quality service and peace of mind to our clients. With our offices in Burlington, Stowe, and St. Albans, and our Dennis Ricker & Brown offices in Montpelier and Lynnonville, we are here when you need us.
It's time for Radio Vermont's News and Public Affairs program, Open Mic, with Hester Fuller. The phone lines to speak with Hester are open, 802-244-1777, and toll-free 877-291-8255. And now here's your host of Open Mic, Hester Fuller.
Thank you, John. Hester Fuller is my name, and I'll be with you until 11 o'clock this morning. Mic is open. Phone lines are open. I want to hear from you. I want to know what's on your mind this morning, as we do every Monday morning. You guys make the show. We love to hear from you, love to hear what things you think we should be focusing on. Lots in the news this weekend, lots of great sports news and some interesting news from the campaign trail, interesting Vermont developments, all kinds of stuff we could latch onto this morning. What do you want to talk about? Give us a call, 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Of course, the big news on the campaign trail, I suppose, has to be the story that broke in the New York Times over the weekend. The reporter that found in her office mailbox copies of the top three pages of three of Donald Trump's state tax returns, showing that he had lost enough money on some business deal to avoid paying federal income taxes for pretty close to 20 years. What does that make you think? What do you think of that? Doesn't say there's anything illegal about it, just said he was minding his business and following the laws. And in fact, he even puts the spin on it that he was honoring his fiduciary responsibility to shareholders and to his family to take advantage of the tax laws that legally allowed this to happen. What do we think about that? What do you think about that? Give us a call, 244-1777, or give us a call toll-free at 1-877-291-8255. That question doesn't grab you. How about the other question that that whole thing sort of begs, which is, what about a system that lets you lose pretty close to $1 billion and still keep on ticking? He's like a weeble; it won't fall down. He just keeps right on ticking. What about a system like that? Do you know anything? You ever had that kind of a advantage in your tax situation where you lost a bunch of money and you weren't able to just write off taxes thereafter? Matthew from Glens Falls, New York. Good morning. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Hester. Actually, you were starting to get to the points that I was beginning to make. I mean, as far as Mr. Trump goes, as you say, he hasn't violated any laws, and the mainstream media seems to be focusing on the wrong things.
Mm.
Now, there's like four questions. Well, three questions. Four, but I don't expect. The first one is, how does a self-proclaimed genius manage to lose $915 million?
There is that, isn't there?
But we'll let that go. But the other three questions is, number one, you can talk about Donald Trump for a long time without ever using the word modesty. And if he's so proud of the fact that he never paid any taxes for 18 years, why hasn't he let us know about that like he does with all his other achievements, both real and imagined?
That's a perfectly good question as well.
Okay. Number two, another word you can never use with Donald Trump is altruistic.
Mm-hmm.
And if the tax system works to his advantage, this, you know, as is, what is his incentive to change it so it no longer does?
Mm-hmm.
And number three, if he's so proud of being a genius and not paying taxes, what does that say about the people he expects to vote for him who do pay taxes?
Mm-hmm.
What does he think of them?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what we should be focusing on.
Those are three really, really good ones. I'd like to go back to your very first one, because that's certainly a question that has occurred to me as I've been watching this story unfold over the last few days. His big claim to why he ought to be made president is that he's got the business genius to actually start running this country like a company. And yet, how does a business genius manage to lose north of $800 million? I don't know that I'd be in business that long if I did something like that.
Well, unless you did it on purpose.
Well, there's that possibility. What about the people who work for him, though, whose livelihoods are kind of all upended by that kind of shenanigans?
Who are paying 28% on their income.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's up to them, you know, but
yeah.
But you're right. You know, I mean, like I say, you're bringing up things that, you know, the other media aren't. I think these are the questions that should be asked, and thank you for bringing them up.
Well, thanks very much. Let me ask you something. I'm going to take a wild guess here and suppose that before all this broke, you weren't leaning toward Mr. Trump as your candidate. Has this altered your thinking in any way, shape, or form about
what
you're doing?
Well, my thinking before this was, I think it's a shame they can't both lose.
But, I don't know.
But one of them has to, and it better be Donald Trump. So no, it doesn't improve my opinion of Hillary Clinton.
Mm.
But it doesn't, it certainly doesn't improve my opinion of Donald Trump either.
Yeah, I can see that. Did you watch the debate last week?
No, it only encourages them.
Yeah, there is that too. I would encourage you to watch some of that. I will say that I'm a rabid Bernie partisan, still am, probably.
Oh yes, me too.
Always will be. But I will tell you something. I watched that woman get up there, and I don't think there has been a more qualified person to run for this office in my lifetime. And I'm getting kind of ancient at this point. I mean, I write my birth date in Roman numerals. That's how old I am.
Oh well, so, I listened to you. I was listening to you last week, and you were talking about that. And I was born in 1948, so I'm today's winner in the Geezer Derby.
Okay, you win in the Geezer Derby. Fair enough.
But you're right. There's no question that she's been preparing the job for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
This has been the goal, and like I say, she's ready. And the thing about the next debate is somebody said on television that Donald Trump he obviously didn't study for the first one. But you can't. Even if he did study, he doesn't have a base of knowledge to build on.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't have a foundation of knowing what's going on. He's not going to learn all that Hillary Clinton knows in the next week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't have cliff notes for this job.
No, they don't. Exactly right.
Yeah.
And like I said, okay, you're right.
Okay. Well, listen, Matthew, thanks for calling in. I hope you'll call in again. I don't know if you've called in before. I don't recall.
I have, and you probably haven't heard the last of me.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
I'm retired now, and I have a lot of time.
Oh, good.
Hand.
Well, you keep reading, and you keep thinking, and you keep that dialing finger pointed up.
Thanks a lot.
Great.
Esther.
Talk to you soon. John from Callis, you're on the air on Open Mic.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
A couple of things. One, when you're on the air, your obvious bias against Trump, it's unbelievable. And two, this whole thing about taxes, as a former business owner, I looked for every possible deduction I could find. And if I had a loss on a job, I claimed that.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree with you.
I'm sorry.
I can't think of any business person in the country that does their taxes and says, well, we took a big loss on that, so we don't actually owe taxes this year. Well, let's not deduct that. Let's pay taxes anyway.
I totally agree with you. I'm not saying this was illegal or that he shouldn't have done it.
Yeah,
I haven't said that yet.
The tone of your voice is just so insulting. It's sickening.
Okay, I'm sorry you feel that way.
Well, it's the whole media is digging. And let me be clear first.
Okay.
I'm not real thrilled about Trump.
Mm-hmm.
But to hear somebody say Hillary is the most qualified person on earth, when Obama said that, the first thing I thought of is, well, then how come you beat her when she ran against you?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, I don't think that woman could tell the truth if her life depended on it.
Mm.
She is willing to do and say anything to get elected. She's insulting almost as bad as Trump with her hot sauce and her pandering and her voice changing depending on whether or not she's talking to African-Americans in the South. It's just to hear everything is hatred of Trump and ignoring Hillary.
What would you like to see for a choice? What would be the thing that would make you say, well, finally we got somebody up here we can
anybody
choose?
But these two.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, anybody.
So you see,
the way I look at it is my choices come down to crooked or crazy.
Oh, God, that's no choice.
But I'm just getting really fed up with the biased reporting. Why can't media just report the facts without putting in their own personal beliefs and feelings into things? I mean, it drives me nuts.
I can see that, and I actually can. I hear you. Let me tell you, and this may have no impact whatsoever on your opinion. My sense is that absolutely everybody's got an opinion. right? Whether they voice it or not voice it. And I just think it's better in a program like this one, which is not about necessarily news reporting the way it would be during a newscast. It really is about getting people's opinions about what's happening. It's better to be open about what your biases is. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I have that I hold each candidate in equal, you know, in an equal balance. And that's just my view, you know. And I can totally understand why you wouldn't, why you would might see that differently. But that's where I'm coming from in this particular context. In other broadcasting situations, you would hear a very different presentation because that's why I think the role is different in other places.
Okay, but well, back to the point about the taxes. I think that. To me, it's an irrelevant point because I've been in business for a lot of years and done business with a lot of very large corporations, and quite a few of them filed bankruptcy like we drink water. Every couple of years, I'd get a 200-page bankruptcy filing from one corporation or another. So all this stuff about is bankruptcy and not paying taxes, I think it just, to me, I don't care. I mean, I try to avoid paying taxes as much as I possibly can, too.
Well, you know, and most people try look for the deductions that they can legally take, too. In fact, the IRS encourages us to take what's legally, you know, allowable to take. I think what a lot of us don't understand, though, who aren't, you know, as familiar with the whole bankruptcy proceeding, is how this can keep happening. I mean, to me, the idea of me going personally bankrupt has a tinge of shame about it. I wouldn't want to do that. I wouldn't want to be known as someone who had done that. I wouldn't want my credit rating to go in the tank because of that. Cool. And yet it does, like you say, I agree with you. It does seem to be something that's sort of a, you know, an even wash for some people who see it in a different context.
Right. But when it's a corporation, it's not you personally. That's how they do it. And I had one company that filed bankruptcy in the course of 6 or 7 years, 3 times under restructuring. And it was a business name I could put out that everybody would recognize.
But,
it's just standard practice in these corporations that, you know, if they can file it, they're going to, and then they stick all their you know, their creditors. I mean, we get half, if we're lucky, what they owe
us. Yeah. Well, what do you think about that as someone who's a creditor, you know, a creditor? How do you feel about that, that, you know, your bills don't get paid?
It's a drag.
But I bet.
The thing about Trump and his businesses and his bankruptcies, and he keeps on going and he's making money, the other side of it is, if he were to file bankruptcy and he was dissolved and his corporations were gone, his businesses, how many thousands of people would be out of work?
Exactly.
That's the only benefit to them being able to restructure their debt, is without it, you know, I don't know how many people he employs, 10, 15,000 people would be out of a job.
That's true, but I can't help feeling that when businesses fold, people are out of jobs anyway.
Well, the way it goes back to me, and people hate it when I say this.
Go ahead, say
people complain about the biggest demon in the corporation world is Walmart. Do you know what you call an employee, Walmart employee, without Walmart?
What?
Unemployed. You know,
these
corporations are—it's good and bad. They're the devil in one respect, and they're angels in another. I mean, they keep people employed, but his tax thing—it's just irrelevant.
Okay,
there's stories of Hillary filing deductions for used underwear. I mean, come on.
I hadn't heard that one. I'll have to say. But John, let me just say then, if as long as people do make it into something that. You can understand why people would want to see the tax returns of the folks who are, you know, running for this office. If it's not such a big deal, why hasn't he?
I mean, obviously, he's probably trying to hide something.
Yeah, I don't know what it would be.
I mean, you guys are all reporting about this, but when Hillary filed her returns, which was great, she put them out there, of the $2.5 million they donated to charities, about 2.3 was to their own Clinton Foundation, which supplies them with a private jet to fly around on. I mean, they're all doing shady, sleazy things to get around it.
Well, they're all,
doing it. It's
everybody.
I'm just getting frustrated with the nonstop.
You know, I can
Trump
totally hear that. I can hear that. I have two calls backed up at this point, but I would encourage you to call again. I'd really love to have some more conversation with you. This is interesting, and you know things that I don't know, so it's really helpful to me to have you call in. Rama from Williamstown, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm going to just make two quick points here. One is, you know, I don't have anything personal against Donald Trump. I don't care about Don Trump individually. I don't know him, never met him, never even, far as I know, been in the same town with him except for maybe when I was in New York City by off chance. I do know this, though. Don Trump and what he represents is this path we saw really come to fruition when Sarah Palin was nominated by the Republican Party to be the vice presidential candidate back in 2008, and we started with this right-wing conspiracy blog-driven governmental policy, which has really come to fruition down in Washington, D.C. And Don Trump is the epitome. He's the son of Sarah Palin in every political sense of the word. He has taken what she's done, magnified it by 100, and brought it out. And he's brought out the Sarah Palin supporters and the folks that are willing to just take conspiracy theories at and just take them at the word and to run with it without any fact checking.
Well, so let's see if we can pin this down a little bit. If he is the flowering of this trend that's been in the works for at least, you know, as many years as since Sarah Palin, what are the other hallmarks of it, the way you see it?
Well, I mean, you see it with this absolute intransigence and unwillingness to work with anybody who sees things differently than you do. I mean, people complain about the Democrats down in D.C. being political. Sure, they're political, but I have never known the Democrats to not be willing to sit down and to try to talk things through and to compromise.
Truth to tell, I've never known the Republicans to be unwilling as well until this batch.
Well, until it started coming on when, you know, listen, Sarah Palin was the flowering of this. You know, that was the Newt Gingrich revolution that laid the, you know, put the Sarah Palin seed in the ground. She was the flowering of it, and Donald Trump is the natural end result. This is the Republican Party that is just really bringing us some horrendous people when it comes to how to run our country. But here's what people would have to understand, and this is the real, the biggest import about a billion-dollar loss and the multiple bankruptcies of Donald Trump. He was able to go through a billion-dollar, well, almost billion-dollar loss and come back. Mm-hmm. He was able to go through multiple bankruptcies and come back. And not because after each one of those bankruptcies or after that billion-dollar loss that he had to really dig down, move into some little shack somewhere and start from scratch again. It's because he has been born, raised, and lived his entire life in a realm of extreme privilege. And when I say extreme, I mean it's the stuff that you and I don't, we rarely even see in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is financial privilege, which means that, hey, so what? You lose $1 billion, you're not going to go hungry. You're not going to lose access to medical care. You're not going to lose your home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, none of this stuff is going to happen to you even after $1 billion loss. And after running various companies into the ground bankruptcy so that he could even make more money off of things, you know, he's able to keep coming back.
Well, I think
he's a great businessman.
But the thing is, just to be fair, though, as John of Callis was just pointing out, I think he wasn't necessarily running things into the ground. He was restructuring.
No. Listen, one time, yeah. Two times, no. Three times, no, not a chance.
Well, if it's a business strategy, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here, if it's a business strategy that works, why wouldn't you do it?
Well, that's the sham of it. It does work. However, most people, if they have a business and it goes bankrupt, they have to really dig down into the dirt and start from the get-go again in order to. He never had to do this. He never had to give up anything to keep going. As a matter of fact, he profited immensely off of each one of those bankruptcies. The point people need to understand, including those that really think Don Trump's a great guy and will make a great president, he has no conception of what you or I or people less fortunate financially than us have lived through.
Mm-hmm.
He has no idea what it's like to wonder about paying for medicine. He has no idea wondering what it's like paying for enough food for your kids for a week. He has no idea on any of this. He's never had to come close to it. And the policies that he's recommending, and if you go and you listen to what Donald Trump's saying he wants to do with the tax, with the taxes, etc., it's all designed to help him and people like him. He has no concept of what you and I or other folks around us that our financial state go through, period. And you need to understand that, because he doesn't, even though he gets out there, he taps into your anger out there, folks, and makes you feel really good because you can get your undies in a bunch and scream and holler, but that's all he's got you doing it.
I hear you. Thank you very much, Rama. Our connection's coming and going. So there's a word of caution from a person who may not be a fan of Donald Trump. And as John rightly pointed out earlier, there aren't a lot of fans of Donald Trump showing up on this show. But I do appreciate hearing from those who have a different perspective on what we're seeing. The idea that this multiple bankruptcy is a business strategy that works, and that in fact a business owner has responsibility to seek every deduction possible and to write things down and follow the and use the rules to the advantage of the business, the shareholders, and the that's all one thing, but it certainly is far from the experience of the rest of us. The question is whether that matters. Does that matter? Can he run the United States the way he would run a business? What happens if you use, can you use restructuring to run the country if we run out of money? I've never heard of it. Be interesting to find out. Well, actually, it wouldn't be interesting to find out. I don't want to find out that way. Anyway, Bill from Barrie, you're on open mic. Thanks for hanging in there for so long.
That's all right. I've been listening to this, and I want to change the subject.
Okay.
But first, I want to say this. I do not play the lottery, because I don't want to be rich. Mm-hmm. I don't want my name being out there, everybody knowing that I'm rich and I'm a target.
Yeah.
The example of brand-new story, Kim Kardashian.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, okay, I won't say any more.
No, you're talking about the jewelry. Let's bring everybody up to speed, though. Which story are you thinking about, the jewelry one?
The one about her being robbed, tied up in her room over in Paris, and being robbed. That means her life was threatened. Money isn't worth it.
I agree with you.
I don't want it. And I think some of these people who are so rich are so smart, they carry thousands of dollars worth of jewels with them so that this can happen. But this isn't why I call. Oh. I want to change the subject.
Okay.
I like Vermont. Vermont is a very, very beautiful state. And in my opinion, Vermont has the best fall foliage of any place in North America.
I wouldn't argue with you.
Okay. And I have done a non-scientific study over the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What I did, I got on my computer and looked up the pictures that I took. I date every picture I take.
Yeah.
So I have discovered that last year, and this year is coming the same way as last year, the pictures, I'll give you some examples. The pictures were later.
Yeah.
The brightest foliage, the peak foliage, right around here. I went up to Elmore last year, too.
Yeah.
And that was on, I think, the 6th or 7th of October.
Mm-hmm.
And got some beautiful pictures. But that was the earliest. I have pictures back in around 2000, through the 2000s, and in 2011 that were taken in mid-September.
Mm-hmm.
That were brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I am sitting here. This is, what, the 3rd? And I'm going to go out and scope a couple of places that I have in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I took two pictures that I thought were foliage pictures. They couldn't compare last week. They just can't compare to last week.
So hang on a second. Let me just get my feet underneath me here. What you're saying is that the fall foliage has been changing where it happens. I mean, it used to happen a lot sooner. Now it's happening later? Is that your...
That is correct.
Okay.
Actually, I'll tell you one thing. It's not unless the most brilliant picture. I live in East Barrie. So I have a good shot of Cobble Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, I took a picture on the, I think it was the 30th, 29th or 30th of October, of color. It may not be as complete green. It was more like a deep red, but of Cobble Hill covered with deep red leaves.
Stunning.
I guess it could be oak trees, but because I got to go up there and climb up there and find out.
Yeah.
But... the point is that we are definitely getting later. I think the best pictures I took were from Montpelier, from North Street in Montpelier.
Mm-hmm.
I got some beautiful pictures aimed at Camel's Hump, and of the foreground of brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
That day, the 12th, it was the 12th, I think, of October, I think, was the best day.
It was. It has been tremendous. I hate to cut you off. We got to do a little business this morning, Bill, but thanks so much for calling. Thanks for the sunflower pictures you sent me, too. They were absolutely stunning. Appreciate it. We'll be right back with more Open Mic after a couple of words. Hester Fuller is my name. Looking forward to hearing from you at 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. We'll be back after these on Open Mic. Good morning and welcome back to Open Mic here on WDEV. Hester Fuller is my name. I'm with you until 11 o'clock this morning. So far, the topic has been taxes, Mr. Trump's taxes, the tax returns, the first three pages that I guess that were released, turned up in the mailbox, the office mailbox of a New York Times reporter late last month. And they've been squirreling around doing their reporter thing and verifying and checking stuff out and then finally this weekend came out with the story that he had registered, I think it was 1995, a loss of $800 million. That's like $0.8 billion, which under the current statutes he could have legally used to offset income from many of the 3 years prior or as much as 15 years after that loss registered. Did he? We have no idea. We don't know how much time he took to exhaust that potential deduction, write-off, rather. We just don't know. But we do know that the man who claims to bring business genius to the running of America at a point in time not that long ago did register a loss of about north of $800 million. So we've been talking about that this morning, about the ways in which it matters or does not matter. We had some good schooling from a person who knows about business bankruptcy and what that is and why that seems different, or maybe we should think of it as different than personal bankruptcy. And we've had folks talking about all kinds of other things as well. We just heard from Bill from Barry, who was talking about the foliage season, which is just about upon us now, and how, according to his, as he put it, unscientific study, but I imagine very thorough, the dates at which we start to see foliage have been creeping farther and farther along into the year. Time was in mid-September, we'd see some glorious colors, and now here we are, you know, first week of October. Just starting to see it. I have to say this morning I ended up for various reasons running the roads this morning to get from my home in Craftsbury here to Waterbury. At one point found myself up along the Elmore Mountain Road, and boy, oh boy, is it gorgeous up in there. There's a couple of places where, you know, you dip down in and the trees close over the car like a tunnel. Good gracious, that would be just absolutely gorgeous. It's going to be a good year, I think. Sam from Williston calling in. Good morning, Sam. Welcome to Open Mic.
Good morning. Had a loss of, how much was the loss?
It was something north of $800 million.
And did they do Chapter 11 on that?
Well, you can't tell, because basically what it is the first page of three different state tax returns from 1995. There's the New York residency. There is, I think it's Connecticut non-resident and New Jersey non-resident. I might be wrong about those last two. One is New Jersey non-resident. And it's just the front page, and you know how those look in your federal taxes. You see
so those
that.
Are... Those were taken from somebody and given to...
Yes, no, Donald did not release them. Someone mailed them to someone in the New York Times in an envelope.
Somebody stole that tax, those tax forms.
Probably did.
So I got to give him kudos for having the fortitude to make it through that and make a comeback.
Uh-huh.
That's not an easy thing to do.
Well, it does seem like a lot of money, but as one of our callers was saying earlier, this idea of these... you know, what looked to normal people like enormous losses, you know, it's a business strategy.
A business strategy? When you lose, you lose.
Well, that was what I would think, but...
If you're going down and you're trying to recoup on that, he did an incredible job to make a comeback like that.
How far back has he come, though? Do we know that yet, really?
Well, he's financing a campaign against... a formidable foe who's being financed by God knows who, because we don't know where all the financing is. We do know they used to get it out of China. We don't know if they're still getting their financing out of China.
Oh, I don't know, but I hadn't heard that one.
You don't remember Johnny
no.
Long?
No, I do. I do know that there's a fair amount of public money in wrapped into this as well.
When they were with the Triad, and he had connection from Arkansas.
Well, you caught me flat-footed there. I am not up on my Arkansas old-time campaign history.
It's where it all starts. You got to go to the beginning. Mm. Everyone wants to go back to the beginning of Trump. Let's go back to the beginning of the Clinton.
Yeah, let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back to Fred Trump and the folks he drummed out of his buildings down on Coney Island.
I guarantee you could probably find 100,000 people that did the same thing.
You know, business in America. What are you going to do?
I'm talking about somebody in a modern age that took money from China and put our country in jeopardy.
Well.
And this is and this just seems to be their modus operandi, to be using monies. And they always do use somebody else's money. I don't think it's being, let's face it, the press doesn't really look at them that hard. So it's,
Well, I do know it's above my pay grade to really know the ins and outs of it, but I can tell you that if I had legal responsibility for this, I would be devoting a good deal of more of my day than I have time to devote now with my three jobs to looking into the details of it.
Well, we all have to work three jobs.
That's right. We sure do.
So I got a guy in there that can get me to one.
Get you down to one. That's a bar that seems attainable. It really does.
I'm not sure if it is or not. It's the life you choose, so that's the way what you get.
We'll tell you what, right, if you get work, one job, that would be great.
That'd be nice.
Good luck. Thanks for calling. What are your thoughts about all this? We're talking right now about the news that came out this weekend about Mr. Trump's tax returns and what they really mean, what they signify, how important this is. Do they really tell us anything definitive? It's a very large number. Does it make a very large difference? How do we know? What's the deal? For some folks, just the size of the number makes them balk and say, well, you know what? He doesn't know anything about who I am or how I live, if he even has numbers that large that aren't page numbers on his official documents. Other folks have said that this is part of a pretty common pattern in American public life and business-wise, selling, taking losses against income and using the existing laws to restructure businesses that are suffering financial difficulty. What about that system? I mean, that's the thing it takes my mind to. What about a system that lets this happen? On the other hand, do you want someone who has an enormous business employing lots and lots of people to just go belly up and throw all those people out of work? Tough questions. No easy solutions when you're talking things that large. I wonder if largeness is just not at the bottom of all of this. Who knows? What do you think? Give us a call, 244-1777, or toll free, 1-877-291-8255. I had a note here that I wanted to call. Oh, yeah. The other thing I was interested in hearing your opinions about this morning. Down in Rutland, of course, they got the federal designation earlier this week to become a destination for Syrian immigrants, and they are committed to taking and finding new spots for 100 Syrian immigrants. And I'd love to know what you guys think about that and what you think Vermont's responsibility is, if not a state responsibility, a people's responsibility toward folks who are driven from their homelands in the teeth of a horrendous, horrendous war. Love to know your thoughts about that. 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. I've heard arguments this weekend that really the churches should be stepping up to take care of this. What about that? If a church in your town is stepping up, I'd love to hear about it. If a church in your town is stepping up and it's made you a little apprehensive, I'd like to hear from you as well and just want to understand how you see this, want to understand your point of view. Surely like on every other topic that comes up here, I've got my own views. But one of the things I love about this program is you tell me your views and I see things in a different way after I talk to you. So give us a call, 244-1777 or toll free, 1-877-291-8255. What are your thoughts about that, about the decision that makes Rutland a destination city for Syrian immigrants and up to 100 going to resettle in that area? Turns out Vermonters have really been stepping up to the plate there as well. There have been all kinds of calls and offers of assistance from folks all over the state. A fellow who runs a bike shop, this I heard last week, runs a bike shop calling to find out how he and his buddies can donate some bikes to the folks that are coming in so that they have a way to get around Rutland Center City. Give us a call, 244-1777 or toll free, 1-877-291-8255. It's about a quarter of 10. Of course, at 10, we will break, as we always do, and listen to news. And then we look forward to hearing from our buddy down there in the basement of the White House, Victoria Jones from Talk Media News. She checks in every Monday morning shortly after 10. We'll hear from her what the buzz is in D.C. We have a vice presidential debate coming up this week as well. Be interested to know whether you're planning to listen to that, what you expect to learn from it or not learn, or what intrigues you about it. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Carol from Glover did. Good morning, Carol. What's on your mind this morning?
Well, you were talking about the refugees coming into Vermont,
yeah.
and maybe the
mm-hmm.
churches should step up,
mm-hmm.
and I agree with that, and just wanted you to know that I go to the church on the Common in Craftsbury,
uh-huh.
and we had what is called the Giving Tree,
yeah.
and so church folks bring in items to help make living quarters ready, you know, things like towels and brooms and dustpans
uh-huh.
and all that sort of thing that you need to kind of set up housekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
You make a tree of some kind. We just had a tree branch in the church, and the leaves on the tree have names of items, and people take leaves and buy the stuff and bring them back. And we, at our church, did enough for two families.
Wow.
And I know that the church in Greensboro also did the same thing. And so I think there are churches around that are trying to provide support for those families coming in.
Well, that's really good to know that, and it's really great to know that there are places right in our local communities where if we want to do something material and real, we can do that. We can just step right up.
And it's done through I think it's called the Vermont Refugee Resettlement Program.
Yes, they're out of Burlington. I think that they are coordinating a lot of these efforts. That's terrific. So that folks who would like to do that, ask around, check in at your own church. If you're not part of a formal church, no reason why you couldn't get in touch with the Refugee Resettlement Program yourself and talk about creating a local effort to provide support to the families who are coming here. And, Carol, thank you so much for giving us a call, and I hope you'll check in again sometime.
Thank you.
Todd from Barrie, you're on the air on Open Mic this morning.
Yeah, this is Todd from Barrie, and I would just like to address the situation that the gentleman talked about earlier about who should run our country and the situation with Trump and losing money. Anybody owns a small business knows that whether you buy computers or photocopiers or whatever you buy, you carry forward your losses over X amount of years.
Right.
I guess the thing that scares me the most about Hillary, fact is they both scare me, but I look at this foundation situation and it scares me to death. If she was to run our country like the foundation is being run, we could be in a really, really bad spot in the sense that for some reason that they've never been audited, the foundation.
I don't think that's right.
With trust in anything.
Well, wait a minute. I have to differ with you there. I mean, they can't continue without being audited. They have to have an audit pretty much annually and file the report.
Yeah. Well, no, you're right, but they haven't. And the other situation is they do not have one independent person on their board. So they're running a defunct foundation, actually, along with the fact that they've never even actually filed as a foundation. They started out the situation under something else. The other situation, you know, she has a track record with doing favors for people like the Lincoln bedroom.
She did that favor?
She
did that favor? I don't recall her doing that favor.
This is back when her husband was president. You don't
recall anything,
apparently.
Oh, so maybe he did a favor?
Apparently. This is a fact. I mean, we all know it to be a fact.
No, I don't.
That's a situation that's very bad. You really should look into this because I don't know why it's not discussed.
I think the reason it's not discussed is that's not the case.
Well, yeah, because it is the case.
Well, if you can see, you know what? Tell me.
The other situation that scares me most, mm-hmm. maybe, uranium is actually used to make atomic bombs. I don't know if you're aware of that or not. Under Hillary, we sold 25% of our uranium to Russia.
Under Hillary?
Of which met a lot of that uranium, guess where it ended up? In the hands of Iran.
Under Hillary?
I mean, it's a scary situation where we're selling uranium to Russia under Hillary's reset button, and then Russia takes the uranium and sells it to Iran.
Well, that would be a nasty thing if that was the case. Todd from Barrie, thanks so much for your perspective on these events, because these are things I had not known, and things that I have not seen documented. So this is new information to me, and thank you for calling. You are listening to Open Mic on WDEV. It's 12 minutes in front of 10 o'clock in the morning, and we are going to stop and take a little bit of a business break right here. Good morning, and welcome back to Open Mic on WDEV. It's about 10 minutes in front of 10 o'clock news time here on Vermont's WDEV News Radio Network. We will be hearing what's going on in the world, and then we will be checking in with our friend Victoria Jones from Talk Media News, calling us every Monday morning from the basement of the White House, tucked right up there against the frost wall. I don't know. Knees under her chin, holding her little microphone. I just love the image. I just plain do. Then later on in our 10 o'clock hour, we're looking forward to chatting with Ross Connolly. He is, of course, the editor at the Hardwick Gazette, and he is doing something kind of innovative and unique, trying to find a new owner, a new custodian of the legacy that is the wonderful Hardwick Gazette newspaper, been around before the last century even started. And he has moved the campaign to Quickstarter in an effort to raise the necessary funds, and we look forward to chatting with him about that and finding out more about how that's going and what he's seeing in the way of folks. He says he's been getting letters in from all over the country, so it'd be interesting to see and hear from him about the ideas that are floating around about what's to become of the Hardwick Gazette. He's ready to retire, and he's certainly entitled. He's worked so hard for so long on such an institution that really has made such a difference in that neighborhood, my neighborhood. So I'm kind of partial. I love the Hardwick Gazette. So we'll be talking to him in about, let's see, maybe half an hour, a little bit more. And in the meantime, we want to hear from you. We want to know what's on your mind and what you think about the news of the day. Give us a call at 244-1777 or toll free 1-877-291-8255 is the phone number for Open Mic. We've been talking about Mr. Trump and the first pages of his state tax returns that were released in the New York Times this weekend. Not released, they got hold of them. Somebody mailed them to somebody on the Times, and then they spent a good couple of weeks vetting them and even went down, tracked down the accountant who'd done the tax prep on those pages. He's down in Florida, I guess retired at this point, but he said, yep, indeed, those were legit, and went on to discuss a couple of the anomalies. They noted that the typeface, I guess, for that very substantial number in the loss column on the front page of the tax estate tax returns had, like, the first couple of digits were sort of out of line, out of kilter with the rest of it, and in a different font. And he explained that that's because the software he was using to do the tax returns didn't go that high. Couldn't take numbers that high, so he ended up having to type them in with his ancient old IBM Selectric typewriter. Anyway, interesting perspective. Oh, what else have we been talking about this morning? Well, the immigration decision down in Rutland, the decision to make Rutland a destination for the 100 Syrian refugees who'll be arriving, I guess, now. December, I think, is what I've heard, is when we're expecting them to arrive. And we've been talking about efforts underway around the state, community groups, church groups, other groups, getting ready, collecting supplies, doing things to make our newest residents feel welcome and to help them make the adjustment to living here after living in Syria. Love to hear your thoughts on these and any other issues of the day that you think command our attention. 244-1777 or toll free 1-877-291-8255. You know, one of the things I would love to hear more about from some farmers, if there's any farmers who have time out there to call in, these new regulations, the new farm regulations. There was an interesting story. Let me pull this thing up that I was just looking at here. The regulations about where you can stack your manure. There's an interesting story in the paper today about a fella down in Royalton who's got three cows, three. Not an enormous herd, but three cows. And he's been a dairy farmer forever. Now he's got the states telling him where he can stack the manure from his enormous herd. And he's just made up his mind he's just not going to do it. He's not just going to ignore those regulations. Curious, interesting strategy, interesting idea. The regulations, I guess, the required agricultural practices, including, they represent updates from the Clean Water Act, and the state has new, stricter regulations on farm activity. They got feedback from more than 2,000 people and released a great, enormous document last month, 33 pages, relating to storing manure, managing nutrients, we'll call it that, restricting livestock, keeping the stuff out of waterways. All this stuff you can't disagree with on paper. I mean, it's not a bad idea to keep the poo out of the drinking water. I don't have a problem with that. But then, you know, the devil's in the details, getting down to the nitty-gritty. Many farms, very small farms may be exempted, but many farms will be required to self-certify their compliance with these new regulations. And they are subject to inspection by state officials in a way that they were not before. The draft regs are online. You can find them in the Ag Department's website, agriculture.vermont.gov. Love to know your thoughts about this. We have one fellow down in Royalton who's just said, you know, this is ridiculous. I've been doing this my whole life. I know how to farm. I know how to take care of my cows. I'm just not going to pay any attention to these regulations. What about that? What do you think of that idea? 5 minutes until news time here on WDEV. Still time for you to call in and register your view. 244-1777 or toll free 1-877-291-8255. I have to pause for a minute because I'm about to sneeze.
Well, we'll take this opportunity to remind you Red Sox are off tonight, but more play coming up later on this week. The American League Divisional Series in Cleveland. But tonight we encourage you to tune in to hear the Kid and the Geezer postseason special. Jasper Goodman, George Como, they'll be looking at the season that's just concluded and looking ahead to the season, the second season ahead. 6:30 tonight here on WDEV.
You know, John, that is just such music to my ears. There will be baseball coming up this week being October.
That's right.
October baseball.
It could be the boys of November, too.
You think? Well, how does that work?
If the World Series goes 7 games, they'll play in November.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow. How far? Wow.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how far. Maybe the second.
Who planned that? How did that happen?
Yeah, it's just if every series, you know.
If every series goes so long.
Got to make room for those 5-game, 7-game series.
A circus on the election channel and a tremendous sports. What if it's, do you think it could be the Sox and the Cubbies? Where are the Cubbies at this point? I can't hear you. Oh, there you are.
Sorry. I was just trying to get a call here.
That's okay. Oh, well, I'll let you go do that.
No, go ahead.
Where are the Cubbies at this point?
In Chicago.
And I'm right here in Waterbury. Silly me. On to the next. Circle six.
The Cubbies have the best record in baseball, that I know. Yeah. And let's see here. 103 wins, 58 losses, and so...
So it could be Sox and Cubbies. Well, it would be just like a dream.
You know what? The Cubs are going to just have to wait to see who's in the wild card before we figure out who they're going to take
on. It's going to be tremendous. It's just tremendous. I have to say, I mean, I love the Sox, and I will just go to my grave rooting for the Sox. But I have to say, there's a piece of me that also is just so thrilled for Chicago, so thrilled for the Cubbies fans, and really hoping that this can work out for them.
Well, quite the weekend in Boston, for David Ortiz, you know, saying goodbye to Big Poppy in the regular season. Of course, we're glad to see some postseason play. We don't know what could be his last game.
Well.
But, boy, did you see any of the ceremonies yesterday?
I did not, and I have, like, all the YouTubes bookmarked, so that's my plan for dinner.
It's definitely worth checking out, and... Gee, can't Poppy, wait. If you run into some financial straits, just melt down that gold bat.
or that 6,000-watt smile. Just turn that down and use the power out of the battery.
$500,000 from, I think, the Red Sox coaches and $500,000 from the Red Sox owners to his organization.
To his children's foundation. That's tremendous.
Had kids there who he's helped in the Dominican Republic. And then, of course, how many Red Sox fans... my wife kept saying, "Was the Sox kept coming out to honor him?" Mm-hmm. Well, who's that? It's Timlin. I got lost. It was just so many faces.
It's amazing they squeezed the game in.
I know it. If I was a Blue Jay, I would have been sitting there going, "Yeah, come on,
yeah,
guys. We're still trying to get into the playoffs, guys." So,
yeah, and I guess they did pretty well, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, well.
So, anyways.
Well, we had our party, and they had theirs, and then you know that's the way the world is.
Exactly.
And so. We'll have our parties. We'll have more parties. I just feel it in my bones. I know it's going to be so. What a tremendous weekend. Of course, not so hot for the Patriots, I guess, huh?
No.
When you start Helen Keller at quarterback, I mean, what are you going to do?
Well, when a fight breaks out during the warm-ups, you know things aren't going to go well between the Bills and the Pats. And then, the Bills shut out the Patriots in Foxborough at Gillette Stadium. It's never happened before.
Mm-hmm. So.
However, the good news is...
Mr. B.
Yeah, he'll be back. If someone had told you 4 weeks ago... Tom Brady's going to miss 4 games, but we'll make you 3-1. You'd have taken those odds.
I would have taken those odds. Exactly. Absolutely. And sure enough, and he will be back, and it's going to be fine. And I'm trying to look at my second hand.
You have 90 seconds.
I have 90, not 60. Okay. My Apple Watch is just like the tiny little. The numbers get smaller every single week, too. I don't understand why that is, except for I'm just getting older. My eyes are getting older. Yep. Patriots not so lucky this weekend, but next weekend Mr. Brady will be back, and we'll just have to see how that goes. We are looking at news coming up at the top of the hour, just 60 seconds away, and we're glad to have you with us. Hope you'll be with us in the second hour of Open Mic this morning as well. Hester Fuller is my name. I'm here every Monday from 9 until 11 in the morning, and I need to remind you that you are listening to Open Mic over the airwaves of WDEV News Radio of Vermont, AM 550 in Waterbury, also broadcasting off the top of Sugar Bush at FM 96.1 Warren and Waitsfield, 96.5 FM in Barrie, and brand new, shiny clean, squeaky clean signal out of Montpelier, 98.3 FM. Also broadcasting over the independently owned airwaves of 101.9 FM in Island Pond, Vermont. Stay tuned for news, and we'll see you on the other side. Good morning and welcome back to Open Mic on WDEV Radio here in Waterbury. Hester Fuller is my name. I'm with you for another hour until 11 o'clock this morning. Right now, though, we want to duck down south to Washington, D.C., where Ellen Ratner from Talk Media News is on the line. Good morning, Ellen.
Good morning to you.
What's going on?
Well, you know, it's interesting because there's been a lot of talk about all of the Donald Trump tax releases, and of course, he's claiming that it means that he understands business very well, that he can take this kind of deduction. And he has said many times before on the campaign trail that basically he knows where all the bodies are buried in terms of tax, and therefore he can fix the system. What's really interesting is I have another host who looked at the tax return and thinks that actually the tax return is maybe the co-signature of Marble Maples, who was his wife at the time. Somehow released it, and then the New York Times cannot be considered criminally charged, which they would be possibly for releasing Donald Trump's tax return.
Ellen, your signal dropped out, I think, at a critical juncture there. Are you saying that Marla Maples, who co-signed the return, gave permission to the New York Times to run the...
I don't know that she gave permission.
Okay.
And if she sent it, if it was her that sent it,
I see.
Then they would not be criminally liable.
Uh-huh. Well, that'd be an interesting development, wouldn't it?
It certainly would be, and it was actually one of my show hosts that looked at it closely.
Yep. Interesting. Well, that'll be amazing. Lots going on in D.C. this week. Supreme Court gets back into gear today.
The Supreme Court does get back. They are not going to be hearing a lot of contentious cases because, obviously, there's only eight, and they don't want... Hmm. 4-4 decision, so they went with more safe sort of legalese kind of cases this time,
mm-hmm.
and less cases than usual.
Any in particular catch your eye?
No, I've been following the election, and Supreme Court has not been top of my hit parade right now.
You and me both.
There's so much with the election that I'm probably not going to focus on it much until after the November 8th.
Sure, certainly makes sense to me. Falls Church, Virginia, that's where the vice presidential candidates are going to get on the podium.
No, actually, it's in Farmville, Virginia, not
okay.
Falls Church, Virginia.
Okay.
And that is tomorrow night. Tonight, or today, actually, Donald Trump is campaigning in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary Clinton is in Ohio. She's sending Bernie Sanders to Iowa. And then he is going to Minnesota tomorrow. Excuse me. And also on Tuesday, Hillary Clinton will be campaigning with Michelle Obama in North Carolina.
That's a power 1-2 punch. That'll be something. Any expectations? Any buzz about expectations for the vice presidential debate?
What we're all talking about is how many people are going to actually watch the debate. Could be as few as 4-6 million people. And we don't think it's going to get to the 80-81 million people, obviously, that that watched the presidential debate. But we certainly know that it's going to be interesting because, of course, most people don't pay so much attention to the vice presidential debate. But it is, in fact, interesting in that either one of those guys could become president. And what's fascinating is Hillary Clinton will be 69 this month. Donald Trump is 70. Neither are spring chickens.
Mm-hmm.
So the vice presidential debate actually is important whether people watch it or not.
Good points. Ellen Ratner from Talk Media News, thanks for checking in with us.
Thank
and we look
you.
Forward to talking with you guys every Monday at this time. It is 10 minutes after 10 in the morning, and we have some business to do, and then we'll be right back with Open Mic on WDEV. Welcome back. Good morning. This is WDEV. Hester Fuller is my name. You are listening to the Open Mic program, and we want to hear from you. 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. Speaking of the Ethan Allen Institute, coming up at 11 o'clock this morning, as every weekday morning, Common Sense Radio, a project of the Ethan Allen Institute from 11 to noon every weekday. Chris Barbieri this morning exploring the question of how a person decides to run for public office. We'll hear what he has to say, and I'm sure he'll be interested in your thoughts as well. That's coming up this morning. Common Sense Radio, brought to you by the Ethan Allen Institute here on WDEV from 11 until noon. In the meantime, what's on your mind this morning? Give us a call. Let us know. What are the things we ought to be paying attention to? 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. I'm a big Vermont Digger fan. I don't know how you feel about it, but that's my go-to place for Vermont news in the morning. Big story this morning, or actually yesterday morning, Grafton's biggest taxpayer saying no to wind turbine plans. That's right, the Wyndham Foundation. They've been staying neutral, or have been, for the past 4 years on a great big proposed wind project, the Stiles Brook Wind Project. This, by the way, is a story by Mike Fair in this morning's Vermont Digger. I don't want to make it sound like this is my reporting. It is not. But the foundation changed its tune Friday. They issued a statement opposing construction of this project on a ridgeline between Grafton and Wyndham. 28 turbines proposed for that project. The foundation says they respect everyone's point of view on this important matter, but they conclude the wind project is not in Grafton's best interest based on environmental, economic, and aesthetic concerns. Of course, the developers were out very quick saying, oh, it's really a shame that you are coming to that conclusion so early. There are public meetings scheduled Tuesday and Wednesday to talk about changes to the project's footprint and the economic benefits they expect to devolve to the communities involved. And the decision disappoints the developers, they say, because it appears that the reasoning of the foundation is based on inaccurate information and confused facts. So we'll have to see how that story unpacks and unfolds itself in coming weeks. Thank you to Vermont Digger for leading the way on this, as you often do on many issues. What are your thoughts about wind on ridges? It's a recurring issue here in the state of Vermont. I don't know too much about the Wyndham development project yet, the Grafton Wyndham Ridgeline project. I imagine I will be getting up to speed over coming weeks. Curious about your thoughts about the principles involved, what you think needs to happen when one of these things comes up. Who needs to have a say? Whose say ought to prevail in some of these discussions? Give us a call and let us know what you think about this or any current event that's caught your mind these days. 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. Love to hear from you. If you don't want to talk about current events, you want to talk about something else entirely, that's also totally welcome. We had a caller from Barry, East Barry, earlier talking about the burgeoning leaf season and his observation that it seems to be coming later and later as time goes by. I can recall mid-September days when we were at peak color, and now here we are, first week of October, and it's just beginning in some places. Is that your experience as well? Love to know what you think. Love to know what your plans are for the coming weeks. How do you deal with the peepers on the roads? Do you build extra time in, or do you just build extra Alka-Seltzer into your morning routine to like settle your stomach when folks are creeping along in front of you on the roadways? Give us a call. Let us know how you're dealing with or how you plan to deal with the upcoming peeper season. 244-1777 or toll free 1-877-291-8255. Did you fire up the wood stove this weekend? I did. First time this season. Oh, boy. That wonderful smell, though, that hot iron and embers smell, I always forget, and then I'm always reminded the first time I fire up my wood stove how much I really, really do love that smell. Won't be long before I forget again because it'll be on all the time. But the first few days of fall, the first days when you wake up and you need that, it's good. It's a really good thing. Already sitting there smiling I think are you having a moment recalling your wood stove moments there,
no,
already?
No, not really.
Not really.
they were fun for a while.
But, yeah, I know. Do you guys burn wood?
Or no.
You've moved on to furnace.
Moved on.
Yeah, I know. I remember coming to that time
that
in my
juncture,
life.
That juncture, right?
That juncture in my life.
In one direction or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Can't stay right there.
Yeah.
So
you know, it was either, a choice of staying with the wood or having a life, other than my wood pile,
right,
and my splitting maul.
Yeah.
And,
although there are things to be said about it.
Oh, many good things.
Good things.
Many things you can't,
right,
repeat on the radio.
That's
but.
Right. And often have.
And often.
But not on the radio. That's
not
great.
On the radio. No, it's true. It's cider season, too. Great time. We have a wonderful thing that happens up in Craftsbury. I'm not sure how much longer it's going to go on, because I'm not sure how much longer the farmer's market's going to be running. But Kristen Urey from Bonnyview Sheep Farms,
yep,
brings a cider press to the Craftsbury cider market, the Craftsbury,
nice,
farmer's market. And you can bring your apples up there and press you some cider.
Okay.
Oh, it's a great thing to do.
It's fresh.
Love that. Yeah, it's fresh. Certainly is fresh. I love that. I love fresh cider. I love fresh apples and some cheese macaroni with a pot of lightly stewed apples. That's my idea of that's my go-to meal in the wintertime, in the fall time when it's really, really starting to chill down. Of course, we're not there yet. We're still in that season where you leave the house in a tank top and a ski parka because you don't know what it's going to be like.
Absolutely.
Before you get in.
Like this weekend.
That's right. I guess we're due. Roger Hill says we're due for more things, more weather like that this weekend. I mean, this middle of this week.
It's fall.
It's fall, but it's going to be nice fall, too.
Yeah,
huh?
Beautiful.
It'll be really great. Can't wait. Although I will say, I actually think the leaves look better against a dark, cloudy sky. I think the drama of the bright foliage against a cloudy sky is really remarkable and wonderful and heart-lifting. Give us a call here. Let us know what you think about our changing seasons, the election to come. We've been talking about that quite a bit this morning. If you have an opinion that hasn't been aired yet, or even if it has, give us a call, 244-1777, or toll-free, 1-877-291-8255. We'll put you in touch with Open Mic. Good sports weekend in Boston this weekend. Sure was. I don't know if you were there in Fenway Park, I would really love to hear from you. That's one place I would have loved to have been, but I wasn't. And I did not watch it on the TV. I will probably watch all the YouTubes. I'll line them up and just fire them off, bing, 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 tonight when I get home from work. The tributes to Big Poppy, followed by the game, which maybe we don't need to watch again. But the tributes to Big Poppy and the endless stream of folks who came out to honor him. I would have loved to have been there. Would love to hear your thoughts if you were down there, if you got a chance to be in the stadium for that big send-off, that big thank you to Big Poppy. I would sure love to hear from you. 244-1777 or toll-free, 1-877-291-8255. We'll put you in touch with Open Mic. Whatever the topic is that you are curious about. Right now, Ruth is calling from Sheldon again. Hi, Ruth. How you been?
Good.
What's on your mind this morning?
Well, I wanted to talk about the all-payer waiver and the teacher's strike in Burlington.
Okay, go for it. Let's start with the all-payer waiver. What can you do? First, help our listeners put that in context.
Well, we don't know what it is, but we have 3 weeks to decide whether we want it or
mm-hmm,
not.
Mm-hmm.
And Governor Shumlin has said he's been preparing for it for 2 years, so we do know what it is, but nobody knows what it is. I had called AARP and suggested that they might be educating people about it, and they said, well, we don't know about it yet, but
when
we find out about it, we'll certainly let you know.
And we got to pull the trigger on this in 3 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely, in 3 weeks. Mm. And one of the conditions of the all-payer waiver is that healthcare costs cannot increase more than 3.5% per year. And that is unacceptable to me because inflation is less than 1%. Mm-hmm. Why should hospitals and medical stuff go up 3.5%? They're already 40% higher than everything else.
What do you mean, than everything else? I'm not following you.
Well, their rates have risen faster for years,
okay,
than inflation.
Mm-hmm.
So that puts them about 40% higher than what every other service charges.
What about states nearby us?
What about them?
Well, I mean, if our rates are our rates comparable? Is this something, I guess I'm wondering, is it affecting health care delivery around the region, or is this something special Vermont is facing that makes our rates so much higher?
Well, yes. Vermont went to community rating, and that made our rates higher. Mm-hmm. Yes, our rates are higher than other states. Our insurance premiums are higher. Everything about it is higher. And to guarantee a 3.5% rate increase every mm-hmm. year, mm-hmm. oh, it's going to go way up. Even when people wanted to reduce health care costs, mm-hmm. not pay more.
That's
it's
right.
my point.
Yeah, that was sort of the point of all this kerfuffle, and it was supposed to be the thing that drove
now, the
creation
all,
of the...
all-payer waiver is going to pay doctors to keep people well mm-hmm. rather than to provide tests for sick people.
That seems like a good idea, though, don't you think, on the face of it?
No, I don't. It
Why?
Sounds good, but it's not good, because people will not make the choices to be well. Look at the smoking situation. People have known for years that smoking's bad for their health, but do they stop smoking? Of course not.
Well, as a matter of fact, they have. I mean, the amount of smokers has declined precipitously. It's
also,
way there's way less.
Somebody had, I don't know if it was Mike Smith, had the head of the hospital association on, and Mike or so, whoever it was asked him, well, if people stay well, what's the hospital going to do? Because you won't have any business. And that guy said, oh, no, the hospitals will always have business because there will always be sick people.
Well, sure they will.
So, yeah, well, not if we keep them all well.
Well, you know, if there was a magic thing that we could do where we could all stay well always, and even people, you know, that take care of themselves, they get sick.
I know a way, you know, people won't buy it, but the best way for people to stay well is to not have any insurance, not to have any health insurance. Because then they can't afford to get sick, and so they don't go. They just don't go.
Well, I don't know that. I don't know how that keeps them well.
Maybe they die quickly.
Yeah, maybe they do die quickly. I'm not sure that. Well, we're going to agree to disagree that that's the way through this mess. I'm afraid. I'm not sure. I want my friends dying early.
People won't agree to that. But every time when they went to community rating, the health care costs went up. When they went to what they're doing now and they put more people onto Medicaid, they also got sicker.
Hmm.
They also got sicker because now they could afford to go to the doctors. Now they could afford to have all these tests done. And now they're sick. And they're
well, now here's the thing, though. If we get back to the basics here about what all payer is all about, basically it sets prices so that any third parties who are paying for health care, whether it's insurance companies or anybody else, who pay for the services at a given hospital will face the same rates. It doesn't mean that the charges will be the same hospital to hospital, but it does mean that the payers can kind of they have market power that they didn't have before because they're all facing the same rates, so that they can act more as a body to help hold inflation down in health care costs.
Well, you don't know that, and I don't know that. We don't know that. So we have 3 weeks to delve into that and discover if that is indeed true or if it's not true. But I can tell you it's not true. Now, I want to talk about the teacher strike.
Okay, let's hear what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I think the teachers union is being very unfair to the taxpayers of Burlington. They can't afford what the teachers are asking for. The teachers only have to pay 15% of their health care insurance premiums. That's much lower than everybody else. They have very high salaries. They have a lot of days off. I think they're doing fine, and I don't think they should be asking for more. I think what they're doing is absolutely terrible, and it's going to affect all the schools in Vermont, because if they can get it, all the other schools are going to want it too.
Well, I mean, if it's that big of a push, maybe they should.
No.
I'm playing devil's advocate
because
here.
Because the people who are paying for them cannot afford it. They cannot keep losing their homes because their property taxes are so high because the teachers want so much money.
Well, there are more sources of income than just the local property tax. That's one thing. There are more resources, and I'm not saying that it's a good idea to be bumping up costs, but I also think teachers have an incredibly difficult job, and I don't think it's unreasonable what they're asking, but I know that we don't agree together on that one.
Right. I totally disagree.
Yeah.
I think they're well compensated for what they do. And as for having a difficult job, I had a very difficult job, and I didn't get paid anywhere near as much as that. So
mm-hmm.
That's just not a good thing to say, that they have a difficult job.
Well, I hear you.
Okay, well, thank you. Those are my comments, because I think we should be paying attention to what's going on in Vermont.
I think that's, you know, you're right. I think we should as well. Of course, the national election is going to have some impact, at least, on what we're doing, on what we do here.
I think our attention is being diverted away from things that are really important.
Well, what would be the top three? I mean, you mentioned those two things. Would there be another issue you think we should be...
Oh, well, you mentioned it this morning. Required agricultural practices.
Yeah, what do you think about that? I would love to get a conversation going about that. What do you think about those regs?
Well, I own a piece of property that is affected by the shoreline protection law.
Mm-hmm.
And the required agricultural practices laws.
Mm-hmm.
And in Franklin County, they want to build some wind towers on Swanton Ridge, which I oppose.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have to abide by any of these laws. They don't have to abide by Act 250. And I do. And I have to, despite the fact that I can't use my property the way I want to,
mm-hmm.
I still have to pay the ridiculous property taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I went to the required agricultural practices meeting that they held in Franklin County, and somebody asked Chuck Ross, who's the head of the agricultural department, how are you going to police these laws? Who's going to enforce them?
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to do this? And Chuck Ross sat there and said, don't worry, your neighbors will report you.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
I had not heard that, and that would trouble me a great deal. That's not a spirit to cultivate in a community.
No, I don't think so. So, okay, thank you.
Okay, Ruth, thanks a lot. Always good to hear from you when you call in on Open Mic. Love to hear from you, too. If you're listening, give us a call, 244-1777, or toll-free, 1-877-291-8255. Want to know what your thoughts are on the issues of the day. The time now is coming up on 10:30. We're looking forward to hearing from Ross Connolly of the Hardwick Gazette in just a little while, talking about what's going on with the paper and his efforts to find a new custodian of its legacy and facilities. Interesting story. Tough road that small papers are facing. We have seen sales of the big paper, the Rutland paper, in recent weeks. We've heard of other things changing hands, and the small papers, you know, with their very special role that they play in our community lives, it's important, and it's interesting to see what kinds of solutions small papers are coming up with to keep themselves a vital presence in our towns in these times. It's difficult. I think we need to do a break, Artie. I don't know if we do or not. I guess we don't have to quite yet. Artie is standing by, waiting to take calls, and we'd love to hear from you. 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. While we wait for Ross, love to hear from you about the small-town paper. What is your source of small-town news where you live? Is it the store? Is there a paper that you read? Do you read other papers? Is it Front Porch Forum? Have you turned to online sources for your local information? Give us a call and let us know what you think. 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Good morning and welcome back to Open Mic on WDEV Radio, broadcasting out of Waterbury. Hester Fuller is my name. I will be with you until 11 o'clock this morning, at which time Chris Barbieri will be in Common Sense Radio this week, brought to you by the Ethan Allen Institute. This morning, the question, how does a person who cares about the future of Vermont decide to run for public office? Chris Barbieri will explore this morning. Common Sense Radio, brought to you by the Ethan Allen Institute, weekdays from 11 to noon, right here on WDEV. And now it is time to turn our attention north, or I guess east from where I'm sitting. Ross Connolly from the Hardwick Gazette is on the line. Good morning, Ross.
Good morning, Hester.
How are you doing?
Well, doing well. Just a production day here at the Gazette, so we're trying to... proceed as we do every week, although I must confess we do have a little bit of a computer problem this morning.
Oh, boy.
But our great computer person is here helping us work through that so the paper will get out on time.
Well, I really appreciate you calling in. I know Monday is a particularly busy day up there at the Gazette. Last time we talked, you were launching a very special competition to find a new custodian for the heritage that is the Hardwick Gazette. Can you update us on that? Where are we going with that at this point?
Well, where we're going is we're still accepting essays. The contest that we launched back in June is an essay contest asking those who were interested in becoming the owner of the Gazette to write us a 400-word essay saying why they would like to own a paid rural weekly newspaper in Vermont, submit that with a $175 fee, and we would hope that we would get a minimum number of essays. We were looking for 700, mm-hmm. and upon arriving at that number, we would go ahead and judge the essays, and based on a scoring system evaluation, we would choose a winner, and then that person would become the new owner of the Gazette. That contest started back in June, on June 11th, and initially went to August 11th. Mm-hmm. In the rules, we were able to continue the contest, if need be, to for 60 days. So we tried for 40 days, which took us to, when was that, September 20th, I guess, and then we still had 20 days, so we said, well, let's try that, because we had not received 700. Mm-hmm. So we started that again, or continued it, until October 10th, a week from today. And simultaneously with this last effort to bring in more essays, we started a Kickstarter campaign to try to bridge the gap between the essays that we'd received and the goal of the Kickstarter campaign. We didn't know then, we won't know until next week, how many final essays we will receive, mm-hmm. but we set the Kickstarter campaign at $100,000 in the hope that however many essays we've received, that Kickstarter campaign and the entry fees would make this whole thing financially viable. Mm-hmm. So we're in the midst of the Kickstarter campaign now, and hoping that people will go to HardwickGazette.com and learn more about the contest as well as the Kickstarter campaign, see the details of that, and perhaps believing that independent local journalism is an important part, a foundation block of democracy, if you will, that they would choose to donate and help us achieve that goal so that we can proceed to judge the essays and pick a winner.
Now, I've seen other rumblings in different bits of social media. Front Porch Forum, I think, is one place. Facebook, I've seen in other places. There seems to be kind of a grassroots effort out there on behalf of this effort of yours to find a new custodian for its legacy and its facilities. A lot of people locally really do seem to care that the Gazette continue. Is this something that you've experienced? Is this something you guys are working with, or is this kind of spontaneously growing up out of the grassroots?
Well, all of the above. Mm. I mean, we have been, but there certainly are spontaneous efforts growing up to do this. And I must say, one of the most gratifying parts of this whole campaign from back in June and until now and the Kickstarter is the number of people locally in particular, I mean beyond here, but particularly locally, who have said to me, you know, we think this is a really great idea that you have, trying to transition out of the Gazette, get a new owner in, and by the way, we sure hope it works, because mm-hmm. we want the Gazette to continue. And that's just nice to hear. I mean, I think all mm-hmm. of us, in whatever profession we're in, we think what we do is important and has significance for others, but you know, that's us saying it. To actually hear the people who are receiving, on the receiving end of the Gazette, they're the readers, to hear them say, we want the Gazette to continue because it is important to us, is exceedingly gratifying. It's just a real affirmation of the work that I've been doing for the past 30 years, and I think speaks to the importance generally of independent local journalism, as I had said previously.
Mm-hmm.
Recognize that.
We're speaking with Ross Connolly, the editor of the Hardwick Gazette, about the contest to find a new owner for the Hardwick Gazette. If you've got questions for Ross, give us a call at 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Ross, for those of our listeners who may be kind of new to things like Kickstarter, can you explain a bit about how that would work? Would people be, you know, charged if the fundraising amount didn't actually reach where we need it to be?
No. The goal, or the way Kickstarter works, is whomever wants to have a campaign to raise whatever amount of money, they develop their own little web page, if you will, explaining the campaign, as in journalism, the who, what, when, where, and why.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing this, and the financial goal. And so then Kickstarter, it goes up on the Kickstarter page, and in this case, they have a number of categories that people can look at just to see who's trying to get what in various types of areas, and one of them is journalism. So if people go to Kickstarter, click on the journalism, they will see the Gazette. I think it's called Save the Hardwick Gazette project or campaign, as well as others. And so they click on the Hardwick Gazette campaign and can donate through that. And my understanding is that I would only receive the money here at the Gazette if the campaign were successful.
Mm-hmm.
And so anybody who wants to make a pledge is free to do that, but Kickstarter does not go and activate the person's credit card payment unless the total received from all the donors equals the goal of the campaign. If it does not, then the credit card is not processed, and mm-hmm. the individual is not out that amount of money.
So that's an important thing for people who may not be familiar with Kickstarter to understand. A pledge of support is indeed a pledge of support. Ross, as the essays have been coming in, I'm not going to ask you to tell us what they say or what you think is promising or whatever, because I understand you're in a situation where we need to maintain some objectivity over what's coming in. But are there themes that come up in these essays that have struck you, that tells you something about where your idea has taken the imaginations of people?
There are, and one of the themes that runs through many of the essays is this importance of independent local journalism, of weekly newspapers around the country. There's a familiarity with weekly newspapers. People have and are working for them, and or small daily papers around the country, and they indicate from their own experience as reporters, editors, business people, as well as readers of this existence, if you will, of the community press, and of the importance of the local journalism, recognizing that frequently the larger media outlets are not going to give the local coverage that people want to know, because particularly in Vermont, I think, we're a rural state. Towns are very strong. People who live in towns have their own town identity and value that. It's part of their lives. And what may be important here or in some other town is not necessarily all that important on a statewide basis. And, you know, we don't have any argument with that. But what we're saying is our local school budget, the local goings-on in a select board here, the issues that our select board is facing and that voters, taxpayers, are going to be facing is important, and people have a right to that knowledge so that they can be informed citizens. And those types of things come through very strongly in a number of the essays. So it's nice to read that, and leaves me with the confidence that there definitely editors and publishers in waiting out there, if you will, to take over the Gazette if we can just get to the goal that we need. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's financially viable.
To make the money piece of it work. Right. Are the applicants older, younger? Do you get a sense of that at all?
Sure. There's a wide variety. I mean, just demographically, there are people who, well, there are actually some who are still in college, going to be getting out this winter or spring, who are keen. There's some who they're in families, and some of the younger members of the family may be in college. Some of the older members of the family are in the journalism business or in other professions, but see this as something a family can do.
Mm-hmm.
They're people with lots of journalism experience, as I say, on all sides of journalism, the editorial side, the business side. From all over the country. I mean, I think every region of the country is represented, and men, women, couples, families, whatever, people who are interested in changing their profession. We have some from people outside the country as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of fun just seeing this broad spectrum of people who have this interest in, well, passion. They have experience and they have passion about community journalism and want to have their own newspaper.
We're speaking with Ross Connolly, who's the editor of the Hardwick Gazette. We're talking about the contest, the essay contest, to find a new owner for the Gazette. What's the deadline at this point, Ross? When do people need to get these things in?
The contest entries have to be postmarked no later than October 10th. I guess actually next Monday is a holiday, Columbus Day,
mm-hmm.
so they need to get those things postmarked Friday or Saturday.
Hmm.
And the same with the Kickstarter.
Gosh, you won't
campaign.
Just give us the weekend to like do another draft.
Right. Well, it's kind of humorous that, as you know, and any journalist listening know, we work on deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's not a deadline looming over our head, we at times find inertia. And so each time we started the contest, went to October 11th, extended it 20 days to September, or 40 days to September 20th, and then are extending it to final 20. But
mm-hmm.
each of those first two deadlines, there was a rush of entries that were postmarked by that deadline
mm-hmm.
and came in the next few days.
Oh,
and
man.
It's like, you know, we could do this a couple days ahead of time. We don't have to wait till the absolute deadline to send something in. But again, I think it's part of a journalist's DNA. They work on deadlines.
They work on deadlines. Well, that's fair enough. I certainly can understand that. We wish you certainly the best of luck. Gosh, it sounds like the essays might make a wonderful book themselves if they're addressing
this.
Well,
I mean, they are. I mean, they're just delightful. I mean, all the essays are delightful. And it's just, again, giving such a cross-section of people from around the country and outside the country and their views and things, and it's even whether or not the contest works, it's been a lot of fun just to learn of all these people and their views.
Mm-hmm. I would think so, and I would think it would be a great affirmation of what you've given your whole life to, this idea that the spirit's still out there. People really believe
no
in it.
No question about
it's
that.
It's tremendous. Well, we're going to stay in touch and keep us posted as this goes onward, and best of luck on the Kickstarter campaign, and I really look forward. I have every expectation that the public will rise to the challenge and that we will see the legacy of the Hardwick Gazette, founded in 1889, will go on. Thank you so much, Ross, for taking time on production day to check in with us, and we'll be talking to you again, I'm sure.
You're welcome, Hester, and thank you.
Okay. You are listening to WDEV, Ross Connolly, editor of the Hardwick Gazette, talking about the contest to find a new owner for the Gazette. It's in its last leg, he promises us. Deadline, October 10th, a week from today. Got to get it postmarked by then, but as he points out, October 10th will be a federal holiday, so you won't actually be able to get a postmark on October 10th, which means you got to finish it this week. Got to finish it by Friday or Saturday, I guess, is the last time you can get a postmark before the deadline. If you're interested in taking over ownership of the Hardwick Gazette. The time is, oh goodness me, about 12 minutes in front of 11 o'clock. Love to hear from you. You got thoughts about that? If you had a paper to run all of your own, what would you do with it? What do you think is important to do? What is the role of local media? What do you think the role of print journalism is in local media? Give us a call, 244-1777, or toll-free, 1-877-291-8255. Maybe you've got a really cool idea about how this could work, but you don't see getting yourself together to write the 400-word essay to propose it and don't know how you would shoulder it yourself. Put your good ideas out there. Maybe there's someone out there who's listening who could take it and run with it and make it go, and we would all benefit. Give us a call, 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. What would be the thing that would make you be inclined to take over the reins at a wonderful paper like the Hardwick Gazette? Give us a call and let us know. It's just such an important thing, and it's just so sad to see something like that at risk of not continuing. It's kind of unimaginable, and I would imagine that for some folks it really is so unimaginable they can't believe it isn't just going to, you know, go on in some way, shape, or form. But now's the time, folks. We believe in this stuff. We need to step up to the plate and say we believe in it. And you don't have to have a whole plan. You don't need to have the business plan in place yet, but you do need to have a 400-word coherent thought about why you think it's important and why you would want to continue what has been a real resource for those of us who live in the area, the Hardwick Gazette. Since 1889, it's been going, and Ross is looking for someone to take it over. He's ready to step down. Give us a call if you have thoughts, 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. I don't know if I dare look and ask if we need to take another break. We're all done because it sounded like that was PSAs. Am I right? We can do one more? Then maybe we should do that. We'll be right back after these words on Open Mic. Good morning and welcome back one more time. This is Hester Fuller and you are tuned to WDEV News Radio Open Mic Program. We're here actually every weekday morning from 9 until 11. I'm in the chair on Mondays. Mike Smith will be back tomorrow and for the rest of the week. And as always, we invite your calls and your thoughts, 244-1777 or toll free 1-877-291-8255 is the number. And, you know, if you miss a program here on WDEV and you want to hear about it or you hear about later something that was said on this show, you can always tune in and find the podcast. Jay Austin, who is our web wizard, is very good and on the ball and diligent about getting these things posted pretty quick. You know, within a day or so after the show airs, you can find the podcast. If you go up to the WDEVradio.com webcast and look for Open Mic and then just follow the badges to the archive. Monday is my show, and the other days are all Mike's shows, so if you remember which voice you heard as host, you can probably figure out your way to the content that it is you really, really would like to listen to. But the podcast is a great way to keep up with what we're doing here, even if you can't be tuned in live. Of course, we prefer it when you can be tuned in live because we like you to call us and let us know what's on your mind. We've had some wonderful calls this morning from some regulars and from a couple of new folks. Still time to hear from you. 244-1777 or toll free 1-877-291-8255. Busy sports weekend this weekend. A lot of good vibes coming out of Boston anyway. If you were down at the, I know I've pitched this before, but I really would love to hear. If anybody out there was down there at Fenway Park over the weekend for the big send-off for Big Poppy, love to hear from you. Love to hear, have the eyewitness report. Didn't watch it on the video. Didn't watch it on the TV. Probably will have to do that tonight. But love to hear what it was like to actually be there. It's such a special park and such a special place. And when you're in a small park like that, you really are kind of like perched on the edge of the Super Bowl, able to hear and see and be a part of the event in a way that's not possible in some of those bigger arenas. So your perspective, if you were there, would be most welcome. Give us a call, 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Maybe the Patriots is what you'd like to vent about this morning. How about that? What happened there? What happened with the Bills? Of course, we really can't complain. They won three in a row without Mr. Brady, and Mr. Brady will be back next week, and we'll see how that goes. How about the Milk Bowl? Anybody out there? Anybody down to T Road yesterday? Love to hear about anyone who was there and saw Mr. Sweet kiss the cow for, what is that, the third time? Was it the third time he kissed the cow? I don't know. Second? Third? I'm not sure, but it's more than once. He's kissed the cow more often than I have. That I know for sure. Great sports weekend in the WDEV listening area. We've got more debates coming up. We've got more things happening on the election front. We've had the tax records of Mr. Trump that we've been talking about this morning. I think, you know, one thing I'm quite confident about is that we will creak on. We are up to all of this as a nation, no matter what the hand-wringing national media, the mainstream media, want us to believe. I think we're up to it all. And I think, you know, whatever happens November 8th, we will wake up the day after that, and we will continue. Vermonters will just, you know, put on their work boots and go out and do what they always do, and everything's going to be okay, at least for the near term. So, still interesting to find out what people think is going to happen and what their choices are and what the reasons are for their choices. So we'd love to hear from you. Coming down to the wire today, though, but still, file that number away and think of calling us next week. At the top of the hour, we're going to have Chris Barbieri in here. He is, well, at the top of the hour, we're going to have a bit of a news break, and then it'll be time for Common Sense Radio here on WDEV every weekday morning from 11 to noon, right before the midday news service. Today, it's Chris Barbieri. He'll be in to talk about how a person who cares about the future of Vermont would decide to run for public office. That's the topic this morning, 11 to noon today on Common Sense Radio. And Bill's lineup for the rest of the week also looks interesting. Heroes who best exemplify the ideals that are essential to a free society. We're going to hear about that tomorrow. Courage, character, conviction, those are ideals. And we'll have Bill Sayre in tomorrow with Lawrence Reed to talk about those things. That'll be Common Sense Radio on Tuesday here at WDEV. Right now, I think we're coming up on the end of the hour. We still have some time. Artie, what's new with you this weekend? How was your weekend?
Had a great weekend.
Yeah? Did you head out? Did you stay home?
I enjoyed fall.
You enjoyed fall. That's good.
It was good to see it come in, and had a great time. Went through a maze out in Colchester.
Really? Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Is it a corn maze?
Yeah, it was a corn maze.
Was it over your head?
It was over my head.
And were you? Was it?
We were lost.
You were lost. Did you? Now, is that really true to you? I've never been in one of those things. I see those. I see them, but I've never actually been in one.
Yeah, you can temporarily lose, you know, where you are. There's no doubt about it. But it was fun.
You could sort of crash through and break out. But
you can do that. Yeah, and I noticed some people had done that. So.
Oh man, that's kind of mean to everybody else, though.
I guess so,
kind of wrecks everybody else's.
It worked out pretty well.
One of my ambitions for this fall is to see if I can scrape together the scratch to take one of those over the top of the trees, the arbor trek.
Really?
Yeah, the over the top of the trees canopy trips down over up and down Mount Mansfield.
Yeah.
I guess
is that the zip line that they
the zip line there. Actually, I know it's a kid now who's just started working where I work, my other job, who works up there, and he says it's not to be missed. So I think that's somewhere on my leaf peeping agenda for fall.
So you'll have to mark it down for a weekend, do it, and then you can
come on
in here on Monday and tell us
all about it. Yeah, I'm afraid it's going to be it better be good weather. I'm not sure I want to go winging through the canopy when it's not good weather.
Yeah, no, rain hitting you, that's no fun.
Although a snowstorm, that might be kind of interesting
as well. It would be interesting, cool. They might not let you go down.
Well, this kid Matt, who works where I work, is just he's gung-ho on it. I guess he leads them. I guess when you go through, there's someone to go along with you to tell you as much or as little as you care to know about the trees and the treetops and the ecosystem you're soaring above.
Nice.
I think it would be really tremendous. I have kind of an ongoing love affair with trees anyway.
Okay.
So I think I would really enjoy it.
And you'd
that.
Like to be on the treetop rather than just looking up.
Yeah, I think I would. I've always wanted to fly, too.
Oh,
you know?
There you go.
Fly
so, combination.
Yeah, I think it would be really great.
Bucket list?
Well, whenever you say that, it feels like I need to die right after.
No, you don't have to. I'm just saying.
Yeah, bucket list then. Okay. But, I'm going to live to tell the tale. If I like it enough, I'll do it twice.
That's correct. You have to tell the tale on the radio.
Yeah, I think it would be pretty exciting. It would be really pretty neat. So that's my big plan. I guess it's a pretty piece of scratch to go, though.
You'll have to check in.
Many box tops. I will check in. I hope I have enough. Maybe get Mr. Squire to send me up there on a recon mission.
Right.
A reporting trip. There we go.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I figured it out.
Yeah, do this. It's all part of the program.
Yeah, I could take my iPhone with and put the audio app in three minutes of...
That'd be perfect.
Think he'd pay me for that?
I don't know. You never know.
Not so much.
Don't know until you try, right?
Oh, I think I know. I don't think you've tried that one before. Well, I haven't tried that particular one, but I know that he's, if he can make the pitch, if he can make the case, and he likes it, he may go for it. And we'll just have to see.
Good.
Anyway, we are looking at about a minute before news time here on WDEV, and I want to thank you all for tuning in this morning. It'll be great to see you back or hear you back here, ear you back here again next week. I'll be back next Monday. In the meantime, though, I need to remind you that you are listening to WDEV News Radio, broadcasting from the top of Blush Hill, AM 550 in Waterbury. Also broadcasting on the FM dial at 96.1, Warren and Waitsfield, top of Sugar Bush. From downtown Barrie at 96.5, and our brand new squeaky clean signal right out of Montpelier, Vermont, 98.3 FM. Also blanketing the kingdom from the independently owned airwaves of 101.9 FM in Island Pond, WDEV News Radio.
The Open Mic Podcast is brought to you by Hickok Boardman, Dennis Ricker and Brown.
Find us online at hbinsurance.com. And you're always welcome to visit us on Facebook, in Vermont, online, on the phone. Hickok and Boardman Insurance Group. We are here when you need us.